This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome to the Place to Be. No longer the pay-per-view reaction, since pay-per-view is dead, so we'll call this the Money in the Bank reaction. On the air, I got my buddy Dylan from Wrestling Culture Podcast. They just put up a new show you can catch. We got Johnny Sorrow from the Titans of Wrestling Podcast, my good friend Chris Zellner, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame voter, and my good buddy Phil Schneider from Segunda Caída. Go to the Segunda Caída website, read all of his and Eric's banterings. And guys, let's get into this show, Money in the Bank. The pre-show, we had no match this month. Dylan, what'd you think of the way the Bryan Daniel announcement went down?
Who the hell is Bryan Daniel?
What's his name?
Is he a stroke? He's Daniel Bryan.
I guess so.
He's American Captain Rock.
Fuck, I didn't know. Whatever. Daniel Bryan, Bryan Daniel, Danielson, Bryan.
The
Daniel Bryan's the
what,
great.
What
the
a great creator. What a great start. No, I thought all the pre-show stuff sucked. I thought it all sucked. I thought it was all stupid. They do this crap for the panel, and I feel like there's a lot of entertaining stuff they could do with the panel, or at least like not stupid stuff they could do with the panel. But they don't ever do anything different. It's just the same shit every week.
Every week.
At first, I really liked the only exception is the NXT stuff. When they do the NXT events, those feel different, even when they do the panels. But I just didn't care for it at all. I thought Daniel Bryan, even though he's red hot and still really over, which is a promising sign. The fact that he didn't have any timetable for his return, it was kind of disconcerting to me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I thought he kind of came off looking like a doofus, when he was actually speaking, but people don't give a shit. He's still over, so what the fuck do I know? I didn't like any of that shit. And then they ended 2 minutes early. What the fuck? You had your own network. And you could do all this shit with this pre-show. You're so badly. I mean, this show really exposed how little depth the roster has now that they've made all these cuts. Because yeah, they had all these people in the Money in the Bank matches, but they didn't even have a pre-show match. And then they couldn't even fill the time on the fucking pre-show for their own network.
I don't know.
I thought it was the weirdest shit.
I kind of like that Shield Usos. Commentary that they had going on, but Chris,
it was fine. It was just odd.
Chris, what do you think about his announcement? I'm kind of concerned about his health, man. Should he come back? What do you think?
Well, shit, he should have had some type of neck brace on or something. I mean, him coming out there doing the yes chant, throwing his hands up. I mean, you're supposed to be having arm issues and you're doing that. That's not a good look for selling this angle. You know, that's the first thing that rubbed me the wrong way about it. Bo Dallas, I understand that, trying to get the rub. They're trying to get him over as a bigger player. I can understand that. And it's more what Dylan said in early. I think that was done on purpose just so they get that Mojo Rawley video out there, so they want to push him up to the top. We are all looking forward to that.
Johnny.
I was really confused because I didn't see the pre-show. I had never seen that one before. And I just turned it on with that Mojo Rawley video at like 8 o'clock. I was like, oh, maybe I don't understand how to use this.
Johnny,
they're showing now.
Johnny, someone who appreciates puns. What'd you think of the boner and the Bo leave puns going on?
As a fan of puns, the boner one sucked. Lawler loved it. You're a boner. I don't remember that ever being an insult, but okay. But I did like Bo leave, and the crowd dug it. That's what I loved, and that's what you were saying. Well, I was reading somewhere like yesterday, someone going, if you think when Daniel Bryan comes back, he's going to be anywhere near main event again. You're just crazy. I was like, what are you, fucking high? This guy is so over. He's still possibly the most over guy there, you know, especially by tonight's reaction. And, yeah, I thought it was fun. I only saw a snippet of the panel, and I didn't even realize it went 2 minutes because I was doing stuff because it's, you know, fucking, you know, pre-show with no match. You know, I caught Daniel Bryan. That was cool. And, you know, in the panel, you know, it is what it is. Herb Stemple could have had a better panel show. You know, that's the. Where's my panel show?
What was that, Chris?
How does Alex Riley still get work? He sucks in that job. He sucks as a worker. I mean, it's ridiculous. Booker, I can understand. But Alex, come on. I mean, they need to, you know, get his ass out there.
Yeah, too. They like nameless faceless, man. But let's move on to the show.
He did a voice. He's like the Frank Caliendo of pre-show panels, just like on Fox football.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to the show. We have the Usos versus Rowan and Harper. I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was pretty great. Chris Zellner, what'd you think?
Oh, yeah. This is, as far as non-Money in the Bank matches, this was probably the best match on the card, and probably the second best match total. Luke Harper's a maniac in the ring, man. The double topes and that quick of a time span for a dude his size is impressive. And Rowan is getting better. I tweeted out that he's gone from being pretty shitty to being kind of competent in there, and their chemistry is really good as a team. And the Usos, of course, are very solid in their roles. So I kind of was expecting the Usos to win. You know, the Wyatts, you can make the case for them to win. But, you know, we mentioned this, it seems like every month now, the Ascension's coming up.
Oh, God.
And, you know, you gotta save that. You're going to save that job, the Usos' job for them.
Okay. Well, Chris.
That makes sense.
Chris, one, I hope the Ascension blow out their knees and they don't come up. And two, put your speak closer to the phone, brother. Johnny, what did you think about this opener?
Oh, I love this. This was fucking fantastic. Just what a way to start a show. All four guys worked their fucking asses off. Just great. I loved every minute of it. I remember when the Usos first came in and they were doing a sort of a Kanye West, you know, preppy hip hop gimmick, and I was like,
I do not remember that.
It was them and Tamina. Tamina Snuka was their broad. And I was like, man, these guys can. I could sense these guys are going to be fucking good if they just let them stick around. And they are now. I mean, they're like my favorite tag team to watch as far as your baby face, high flying type of tag team. Besides that, I love the fact someone in the audience had a sign that said, Ravishing Rowan and Harper is hot. It was made me laugh.
Yeah.
And Lawler, being so relevant, gets in a Sunday morning coming down joke. And hey, Johnny Cash, Christopherson, which I appreciate. And I'm like, that's one of my favorite songs. You know, yay, Lawler. I don't care how dated that is. It works for me. But Harper's got a new shirt. Harper's got a new shirt. They lost the Nazi-esque looking eagle and went for a different design. It's like nooses from a tree or something. So
I didn't know he had a shirt.
Oh yeah, I did. I was at a Rockies game the other day and I saw a guy wearing the Luke Harper, you know, ragged vest with the logo on the back.
Huh. I don't know. All right, so Phil, impressions of this tag match?
I mean, I thought it was the best match on the show. I liked it a lot. Really liked your double Harper Tope and then your double splash in the finish. They were doing stuff. I mean, I've seen the crap kind of tag match from both these teams, and they're still breaking out new things. I think also I think Rowan's officially good. I don't think he's moved past the point of
Phil, you're breaking up on me. I can't hear you clearly, buddy.
Okay. I was saying, I think Rowan's officially good. Like, I don't think he's just a guy who's, you know, gotten better and isn't bad anymore. I think he's actually really good. And I thought he's fine to have your one guy not doing fancy spots, just like, you know, doing a claw throw and a you know, kind of thing where he twists the guy's head off. And he's a guy who can perfectly stay in with that run of how they're doing their run of high spots, which is, you know, hard for a guy that big to you know, keep pace with all those guys.
Dylan,
so, that was really good.
Okay, cool.
I agree.
Dylan, what about you, buddy?
Well, I think Rowan's been good all year. I mean, I think he's been real. I mean, there's been matches he's been in where he's been in the match with Harper against the Usos or against other good guys, and he's been the best guy in the match. If you're watching like SmackDown every week, like I am, but you know, so I have no problem with Rowan. I think he's well past the point of being even a guy that should be looked at as anything less than good. I agree with Bill about that. But one of my favorite things about this was like Michael Cole like outlining the Luke Harper promos and talking about how Luke Harper's. He said that their urges made them pariahs. And then I was like, okay, are they actually going to do a Henry Lee Lucas gimmick with with Luke Harper? Is he actually going to be a child molester killer? Like, is that now his literal gimmick?
That's what I thought when I heard that too. I was like, oh, what gimmick is it working?
I mean, that's an odd thing for a PG promotion to be doing. But the match itself, I thought it was probably the best match on the show. On first watch, it certainly felt like the best match on the show to me. What I really liked about it, besides the things that everybody else has said, was it wasn't one of these matches where everything, like there was a lot of big spots and like a lot of saves and a lot of kind of unique things for the guys involved, but there wasn't, nothing looked super contrived and nothing looked really, really fluid. These are four guys, these are two Samoan guys, two Islanders versus like two basically guys who have, you know, Henry Lee Lucas gimmicks. So you don't want them like doing nice choreographed exchanges. You want them sloppily beating the piss out of each other and falling on the ground. I mean, that's not to say the stuff didn't look good, but it looked exactly like it should have looked considering what these guys' gimmicks are. And so I really liked it. I thought it was a really, really good match, actually.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, one of my favorite spots was early on in the match. This is why I love Harper, and this is why I think he's just kind of on another level, kind of like, you know, like when you watch Cesaro matches, he's just on another level. Early on in the match, I don't know if you noticed, but like he tags Rowan in, and so he steps on one of the Usos' feet he can fucking like attack him without, you know, the Uso having no chance of getting up. Just little things like that to me put Harper on another level. But I agree about
that. Looked like it hurt. That looked like because he was stepping on his ankle.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was like, oh, that looks like it hurt. What a nice.
It's like a meaningless spot that means everything when you dissect wrestling like we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, and someone was saying on the message board that the wrong guy tagged in, but I clearly remember at the very end that the Uso got the pin, slapped the back of the other Uso to get the pin. So,
yeah, they did it right. And also, I thought it was cool that Rowan kicked out right after. So, like, they did just enough to beat him, but, like, he didn't look bad in defeat.
Especially because every time he got hit, he would pound the mat or pound the ground. Like, fuck, that hurt, but, you know, we don't feel pain.
It's because he was selling the superplex.
No, you know, it that's several times.
It was so great.
Yeah. So, but he would like pound that mat like, fuck, that hurt. But you know, us Wyatts, we don't feel the pain. So anyway.
And their new music is really good. It sounds like something Government Mule would be playing. So
yeah, but I missed the accordion version of
that was harmonica actually.
The harmonica, whatever it was, that was rad on Monday.
So at WrestleMania next year, you combine the two and have John Popper from Blues Traveler play it with Drumming Mule as the entrance, and I'm in heaven.
John Popper can't still be alive, right? That guy's still alive?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah, he's alive.
And he's only like 100, and he's only 180 pounds, which is really weird because I know Popper. When they were coming up in the New Jersey, New York scene, I was part of that scene. I know Popper, and it's so weird to see him skinny. he had the lap band surgery and it stuck. You know, he's been skinny for a long time now, but it's still the weirdest fucking...
I don't know. It kind of kills his gimmick, though, right? Like, when your whole gimmick
yeah,
is...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just looking at it from a wrestling viewpoint. You know, you killed the gimmick guy.
Yeah, you remember that period where Dick Togo got really in shape? You know, come on, man.
I know, right?
Half as cool when you're really in shape.
I know. I'm like, I want fat. I'm gonna die in 3 days, John Popper.
Yeah,
not this healthy.
Hey, who was it? Bull Nakano, who got all thin and fine, and then for a retirement match puts on like 200 pounds just for one night or something sick.
200.
Living the gimmick.
Living the gimmick.
It's dedication, brother.
All right. So, speaking of I would say not living the gimmick. Paige, who was so excellent in her gimmick in NXT, who's just kind of another girl on the roster, even though she holds the belt. Chrissy, I like this match, except for their one fuck-up on the superplex spot. But what'd you think of Paige versus Naomi?
Yeah, there was some really fun spots in the match. I thought the mat work. I mean, we had stump pullers and other, you know, nifty little transitions and counters between them two. Naomi is very, very good for her gimmick that she has, and the fact that she doesn't wrestle a whole lot, although she's wrestled more lately. But she can do a lot of things that some of the other divas can't do. So her and Paige work pretty well together. I think if they had more runs with each other, they could develop a solid chemistry in their matches. Cameron was hilarious to me on the outside of the ring trying to emote. And she is so hateable that whenever they do turn her, she might be very good in that role.
Yeah, only if they play that Alicia Fox versus Melina greatest match of all time clip.
Yeah.
and Johnny Sorrow, I'm guessing you were taking a cigarette break or a piss.
No,
break.
I actually watched this one because Naomi, oh my God, that ass. Mm. So in high definition, mwah, fantastic.
All right,
and that DDT
deep
and that cradle
from Johnny Sorrow.
That cradle DDT though, and looked fucking brutal. I'm like, whoa, shit. That was
like the first of six DDT variations.
Exactly.
It really does feel like you shouldn't be having like a really complicated, violent looking DDT, and you're like in your filler ladies match. You know, if you're gonna in a show that's gonna have a lot of DDTs, maybe you should save your super violent DDT for a match of being something.
It was like a side cradle package DDT, and it was like, good lord.
No, I'm with
you. I normally go and take a break during the ladies' match, go have a smoke and stuff. So I don't have to pause it, so I can be on time for the show. And so I knew there were gonna be two this show.
I chose the other one to watch. So. Phil, what did you think grading on the WWE Divas curve?
I don't know. I never watched these matches, so this was the first Divas match I watched in probably a really long time. The thing that really amused me is that I first thought when the announcers kept talking about how athletic Naomi was, that it was just racial code language. Like, commentators normally talking about how the black wrestler or the black fighter or the black wide receiver is super athletic, but as watching that match, she's everything. Man, she really is athletic.
Yeah,
totally. I don't feel. You remember how they say gifted? That they're athletically gifted. You know, that was the old
exactly.
It's like Jimmy the Greek.
I was really expecting Walter to start talking about how Paige is such a hard worker. what a good thinker she was to keep all things. But then again, like I said, watching Naomi, I was like, wow, she really is athletic. This may not be just racist code language. So that was my only comment on that. I had the one joke. So move on to somebody else.
now, Dylan, before I get to you, I know I really like the way it started out with them just holding on to each other, rolling out on the floor, slamming each other into like the ring and the barricade, and just kind of showing a viciousness, man. But, you know, I mean, to me, I mean, it feels like the Divas division is something where they're only half-assed into it. Like, if you really made a push, like there's some talent there, but they're never going to get past that cooldown spot on the card. What do you think?
Well, what I liked about here's the thing that I liked about this match. They didn't put it in the suicide spot, which, you know, they gave to Summer and Layla instead. Okay.
Right.
So I like that. There was a bunch of cool spots in it, like sort of independent of each other. You know, you had a stump tilt puller. I liked some of the counters on the ground. I thought Naomi's dive was actually really cool and potentially disastrous, by the way, because she landed really low on Paige. That could have been really, really bad. But as a match, it's like, here's one of the things. You know, like, one of the new things is to sort of like, you've got this group of wrestling fans, and Chris especially will know what I'm talking about, because he's a Twitter guy like me, who their whole thing is like, oh, the you know, women are treated like garbage in the WWE. Yeah, big surprise. It's wrestling. They're always treated like garbage. This is terrible. This is awful. You know, we've got to treat them, you know, the same. Well, okay, if that's the case, I'm not going to grade this match on the curve, and I'm just going to be honest and say it was decent. You know, like, because you're being honest, there's no way this was a good, or anything more than a decent match. I mean, it wasn't bad. It would have been, like, perfectly good as the second best match on an episode of Superstars with a really good Titus O'Neil match. So, you know,
you're going to get that Titus reference in, man.
from that perspective, it was perfectly fine. I do agree with the argument that they have talent in the Divas division. I wish they would use them better. I wish they would give them, you know, 10 to 15 minutes on one of these shows just to see if they could have a good match. But I also don't, you know, believe in giving them, like, undue praise just because they executed a few spots, okay? I mean, that's fine, you know, whatever.
Yeah. That would have been the sixth best match on that Beyond Wrestling Secret show.
Yes. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, your sixth best match on a Beyond Wrestling show, that's a show, like, that is, a lot of guys on there are amateurs. So,
yeah. Nowhere near as good as the Connor Claxton Frankie Picard opener from the Beyond Wrestling show that went 4 minutes.
No.
Not even close.
Wasn't as good. Wasn't as good as that. Wasn't as good as AR Fox versus DJ Hyde. Wasn't as good as your work rate tag with the guy working as Indy Haku.
Are you going to run down the whole
bar? Wasn't the Mike Bailey match? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, look, we all know that the women's division will be saved and made into the greatest wrestling of all time as soon as this Becky Lynch broad shows up on our TV. Because
she's good. She's good.
But, I mean,
that's kind of,
I'm talking some of the hype.
But here's the thing, man. Like, if you watch that NXT, that first special, Dylan, That match with Paige and Emma was a legitimately great match. Like, that was a great match with that great
execution,
great build. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I joke about the curve because I enjoyed the match for what it was, you know, tonight. But
it's fine.
But I wouldn't call it a great match either. But I would say that, you know, they don't give the women to kind of the opportunities like they did on NXT to kind of build to those, like,
and they should, because at least a few of them have proven that they can do it.
Exactly.
That's kind of my point. Give Paige a shot versus somebody that can work, and Naomi's looking like she can work pretty well, so give her a shot. Give her 15 minutes on something and see if she can do it. I got no problem with that.
No, I agree with you on that.
Well, 15 minutes? How long was this match?
Seven.
It felt like it was four too long. So I didn't come out of these seven thinking I want to give them another seven. All right.
Next.
Well, we're not talking about that first ladder match. Wait till we get to that. Talk about something that's too fucking long. Anyway.
Yeah. So let's talk about NXT some more. One of the guys who's been criticized lately, Adam Rose versus Paul Revere of all people, rising from the dead. What'd you think, Sorrow?
I ran upstairs and I came downstairs and I hear Sandow and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, oh. Well, he's got to be in a costume, and sure enough, because that's what his thing is now. And I'm like, okay, what's this, Adam Rose? And I didn't even think they were going to have a match, and they did. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is going to be throwaway. And I loved it. Sandow in his goddamn fucking dopey costume is killing them. Just brutal offense. And I like Adam Rose's babyface Adrian Street act. I mean, he's pinching his ass, he's rubbing his ass in his face, and putting his hands on his lips, and you know, and this crowd apparently does enjoy Adam Rose, as they kept singing this song throughout the whole thing. And
babyface Adrian Street seems like a pretty strong compliment. Babyface Adrian.
Oh no! I'm not talking about his skill. No! I'm not talking about his skill as a wrestler.
No, he's right, Phil. He stole most of his mannerisms from Adrian Street, especially when he was doing it in
the
NXT.
Yeah, I'm talking about his freak a guy out by being gay on him thing. And
it was a lot more queewee than Adrian Street.
Queewee.
No, it was better than that.
He got as good as queewee.
Johnny's on the money on that though, Phil. Like, he really did like have some strong Adrian Street mannerisms when he was working NXT with the Kicker.
The way he pranced, I mean, his prance around the ring is stolen from Adrian Street.
The boots, like when he would like go into the ropes and break and like kick his boots in the air. That's straight Adrian Street right there.
Yeah.
Having said that, Phil, impressions of Rose or Paul Revere?
Something was on my TV. Part of me is similarly thinking about that match as I was thinking about your nasty DDT in the women's match. It didn't really feel like your comedy match built around with commentary built around JBL's fear of buddies should be a match where a guy is trying to throw potato shots.
This
is kind of weird. It's like, I don't understand why CNO is like attempting to laser set, you know, your Battle Arts comedy matches that weren't hitting as hard as they're in your Battle Arts main event. So that was my one thought about that.
I forgot to add that when Sandow was about to do his elbow of disdain or whatever the fuck it is, he shouted, "The elbow is coming! The elbow is coming!" And that immediately
yeah, that was funny.
Made that a 5-star match to me.
Well, I will say, JBL dropped the Bunny Carlos reference. I marked out. Dylan, did you mark out for the Bunny Carlos of Cheap Trick reference?
Yeah, I mean, this was better than it should have been. I mean, I'll say that. Like,
exactly.
when you saw this like as like a thrown together match, you're like, ugh. But I mean, it's still something that never. I mean, I realize pay per view doesn't exist or whatever, but this really is something that probably should not have even been on the show. this is like the ultimate filler match. Like, they're not even trying to hide that it's filler. Which sort of offends me in the sense of like, God, could you at least pretend that this isn't filler? At least like throw something together that has a semblance of a storyline or a semblance of some meaning to it. It was fine. You know, I mean, it wasn't awful. It was just kind of there, which is not really what you want on a so-called special event. And whatever. I mean, like, it could have been worse. I had no real major thoughts on this. Although I will say, real quick, on the last match, which I forgot to mention, the funniest thing about Naomi taking that DDT, isn't she the one where Oksana busts her eye orbital open on like a dangerous potato shot?
Yeah.
So now she's eating this vicious DDT. Great.
You know what my thought of was watching this? I really missed the Mexicals. Remember when your throwaway comedy match at WWE pay-per-view had like Juventud Guerrero in it?
or even when it had Little Guido in it.
That was what I was thinking. Like, they really need to get better comedy wrestlers.
What about you, Chris? Any thoughts on this before we get to the first main event of the evening?
Well, I got to give it to Sandow. He takes chickens, shit, and makes a chicken salad. And he's given this this role of being this wherever city we're in, comedy gimmick, and he entertains. Yeah, he does it about every time he does it. And I see people, you know, complaining about, oh, Sandow's getting treated like shit, blah, blah, blah. Well, at least he's getting on fucking television and on shows. I mean, he's getting work. Yeah, Kurt Hawkins and guys like that. Drew McIntyre just got fired. So at least Sandow's employed. Rose, I think what we need to have that talk. His music's over. And that's it. When it comes to everything else, it's not working right now. And it's not his fault. And it's, you know, that's all part of the power struggle going on behind the scene. So they got to figure something out with him, because it could be going down real quick, and who knows what's going to happen after that.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm kind of with Johnny on this one. He felt pretty over tonight, man. I mean, you know, so.
Hey,
And Will, before we get to the, oh, go ahead.
People on the internet actually complain about that David Sandow is being buried. Well, is there anybody on the internet will complain about
Twitter?
Is that oh man, why did David Sandow in this band?
Phil, there are still people who think Lance Storm is a great wrestler in 2014.
Yeah, I understand, but. People are stupid, and I didn't realize that was a complaint people actually had. So, like, oh man, why is this guy spending so much
more? There's still people online that think Quack is a progressive genius. Right, Dylan?
I like Quackenfish. Hey, whatever. In 1998, Quackenfish was awesome. Haven't said that. All right, let's go to the next main event here. Johnny Sorrow. We're going to have some disagreements, so I'm going to let you be the first voice on this match. Tell me what you loved about this match.
Well, before it started, they showed John Stewart at ringside because, recently on The Daily Show, he was talking about how much he loves wrestling. And then, of course, with the product placement of the fucking Mountain Dew in front of the announcers, they cut the announcers, and you see Lawler just grab a Mountain Dew and chug for a second and put it down and look like he drank battery acid. And the whole point is that he only drinks Coca-Cola, that's it. And at the last pay-per-view, someone noted that his Mountain Dew was the only one that wasn't opened in front of – so, McMahon is in his cans, drink it, King. Now, Sarah, yeah. Okay, fine.
So that's your thought on this match?
Well, that's the
thing. What do you think of this match?
when they do the little the headshot promos from each of the participants, Zeb gets on and quotes two historical facts about Boston, both of which are wrong. Because Betsy Ross sewed her first American flag here in Boston. No, that was in Philadelphia. And Samuel Adams said, give me liberty or give me death here. I'm like, no, that was Patrick Henry, and it was in Virginia.
I think he did that on purpose. I think
of course he did. Of course he did. It was
crowd.
Hilarious.
The crowd didn't give a fuck.
Of course he did.
They're patriots.
It was funny as fuck. No, I loved it. It was funny. I love Swagger's shirt. At first, I couldn't figure it out. I was like, why is there a handprint on his shirt? And then he puts his hand over his heart, and it fits that handprint like a chalk outline of a dead body. And I was like, oh, that's good. I like that. At one point, Kofi Kingston had me thinking he was actually going to win this fucking match, so it worked. that Rollins bump off the ladders and the ropes and whatever just was sick as fuck. I love the superplex off the ladder that Ambrose did, where he flip bumps himself at the end. The ref pulling Zeb away from the goddamn the ring post before Kane's pyro went off to save his life and save his mustache. I just loved everything about this match. Thought it was fantastic. Even the end, because now and now hear me out. The authority screws over. Ambrose comes out to a fucking pop that people are like, it was like Austin. Well, not quite, but
His pop was huge.
Oh, it's huge. It was huge. He has potential. And I love him. And he's going to win. He's going to win. Oh, no, fuck. The bad guys screwed him. And they screwed him with Kane. Now, you know, and who's their muscle? It makes sense.
It makes sense, but sometimes even stories that make sense still suck. And that's
so
kind
of. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Have Roman Reigns come out and do a Russo?
I would have rather Triple H fucking came out than fucking Kane at this
point.
Yeah,
but he doesn't do that. He's a suit. You know, that's his muscle.
Well,
that's
fucking hire some more interesting, intriguing muscle.
Well, then
get him
sure,
the fuck out of there, because that's.
But I don't think. But I don't think the crowd being deflated into the next match, as a lot of people are going, it's because Kane appeared. Like, no, it's because Rambo's got screwed. The crowd not giving a shit about Kane when it happened. Yes, it's because they don't give a shit about Kane. They weren't booing him. There's like, that's Kane. But into the next match, I've read people going, and then no one cared about this because Kane.
Well,
I was like, what? I stubbed my toe on the stairs on the way up to grab a slice of pizza. You know, oh, Kane. It was his fault because I just saw him on my television.
You should fucking sue him for that toe stub, man.
Otherwise, I love this match. I thought it was fantastic. Ambrose is a fucking star. And there you go.
Phil, what'd you think about this ladder match, buddy?
It wasn't very good. I agree with you. Johnny's comments was like he listed the two cool things about it and then followed it with I loved everything about this match. But those were the two cool things about it. He had one really great superplex bump, you had Rollins take another bump.
I enjoyed
Ambrose was really fun. You also had a ton of Rob Van Dam looking terrible. You had a lot of Kofi Kingston throwing really Kofi Kingston-ist punches. And it went on forever, and it had a terrible ending. So it was like a match that felt like it went 35 minutes and then had an ending that nobody wanted. And there's nothing worse than sitting through a match that long to get to that bad of an ending. The couple bumps they had were really great, but you know, at some point these kind of have, you know, you see enough of these, and it's hard for really any bump in like one of these ladder matches when you've seen two dozen of them to really mean a ton.
Okay. You just watched the Briscoes versus Matt Hardy and Mike Bennett from the ROH pay-per-view. Your crazy matches with like lunatic bumps, that match absolutely destroyed this match. Am I crazy for saying that?
No, it was way better. It was way better. I think if this match had had a run in by a character actor from Justified instead of Kane, I think it would have worked a lot better. Couldn't have the same character actor from Justified, but if it had Michael
John Stewart jumps the rail.
Yeah,
John Stewart jumps the rail with an award.
It's funny you know,
Wood Harris comes in and interferes. I don't know,
It's funny you said it because Nick seriously tweeted tonight. He was watching the pay-per-view and actually tweeted to Matt Hardy about how there wasn't any bumps in that match that was better than the bump in the ROH match.
Well, having said that, Chris, what are your thoughts? Do you agree more with Johnny or with Phil?
It was a train wreck. You know, that's what it was. It's all Ambrose and Rollins, especially what that whole match was about, was them. And they both took insane bumps for them, for that company. And especially to get them two over. Dolph, you know, made his comeback at the end. That's when the match started picking up a little bit. That's when he started doing stuff. But, yeah, the rest of the match was mainly just filler, you know, just you know, lawn scenery for Ambrose and Rollins. Now, you talk about DDT. The DDT that Ambrose hit on, I think it was Swagger, where he was falling off the ladder, and he grabbed Swagger by the head and dropped him with a DDT.
Yeah, the one that led to the injury,
Yeah, that was a cool fucking spot. But, yeah, the fans were insane for Ambrose. He is about ready to explode as a babyface. And I already called him on Twitter. He is the new age Dick Slater, babyface Dick Slater. I mean, for us to have seen babyface Dick Slater, the way the promo cadence is, and just the way he acts, he's Dick Slater all over again. Doing Terry Funk.
Yeah, so it's a third generation Terry Funk.
Pretty much, but he's awesome at it. And Seth Rollins, you know, is tight. And the Dylan had tweeted that he's becoming the new Triple H to him. Look at the fucking tights. Look at the way they're designed. They are the Hunter Hearst Helmsley tights of 1996. The whole design, except this that leather substance, whatever they made those pants out of. But yeah, if you see where they're making him a new Hunter Hearst Helmsley type of guy.
God, I hope not. But, I like Rollins.
When it comes to that result of the match, though, Rollins, he should have won the match because for the storyline. But yeah, Kane coming out was a fucking buzzkill. I'm tired of Kane. I'm ready for him to hit the bricks.
Time to retire
as soon as possible.
Now
the timing on that was really bad too. It really did make Ambrose stand on top of the ladder for way too long.
Yeah,
execution of it was really bad. In addition to being a bad angle, because really you did have to have the Ambrose stands an inch from the briefcase, look surprised because Kane's music, and watch him walk down the ring while he still stood on top of the brief. You know, waiting like the whole thing with. Because you had to have the pyro and the cane, it's Kane. It made Ambrose look really bad because you're just like, just reach up and unhook the briefcase, and then run away. By the time he gets here, you'll be long gone with the briefcase won. And I think that's always a problem in these matches. The timing is always gonna. It's always hard to get perfect timing on near falls, where a guy doesn't have to climb a ladder really slow or stand on the ladder fiddling with a hook for too long. But I thought that was the other thing about that. It looked really bad.
I kind of take that as something that just goes with the territory. You know, that doesn't really affect my enjoyment of these matches. But Dylan, I know you're more in the Phil camp on this. So explain what bothered you about this match besides the finish.
Dylan. You thought you were going to be the one who was going to shit on this match.
Phil stepping on my toes, but that's all right. I got no problem with that because like I'm actually glad somebody else is at luck because I mean there's people on Twitter and like some of the message boards like, oh, this match was great, and I'm like, what the fuck match did you just watch? I mean, I understand like did it fulfill the bare minimum requirement of ladder matches, which is a couple of dramatic moments and a few lunatic bumps? Yeah, but I mean, what doesn't? Like, pretty much any WWE ladder match is going to have that. I mean, if that's the standard, then there's never been a bad WWE ladder match. As a match, I thought it was like this match is the first ladder match I've seen in WWE. Usually, one thing they've gotten good at over the years for these pay-per-views, with the Money in the Bank concept, is they've gotten better about having periods where long guys are eliminated and it makes sense why they're eliminated. Whereas in this match, they were really terrible about that. Like, a guy would eat, like, a not particularly good-looking RVD or Kofi Kingston spot and then be gone for 5.5 minutes. And, like, I mean, again, yeah, that kind of goes to the territory to a degree, but the WWE has gotten a lot better about that, I feel like, in the last few years. So I thought the pacing was really bad in this match. I thought the idea of building to like the sort of Dolph Ziggler hot spot, which I thought was in some ways the best part of the match. I thought that was a decent idea. I thought the Ambrose, as sort of your poor man's Terry Funk doing the injured and then returns coming back Terry Funk gimmick. I thought that was really well executed. Of course, the finish was what it was. But to me, it was just really disorganized. I don't think there was very many spots that looked that good. There was for a match that's being described as this crazy spot fest. I mean, as I said on Twitter, yes, it was. I like car crash matches as much as the next guy, but this had more rubbernecking than it did have metal on metal. There was nowhere near as much crazy stuff in this as you would expect for a match that pretty much needed to fulfill the crazy stuff quotient for the card, given the fact that we pretty much knew it was a two guys were going to win. I also think the match was really hurt by Barrett not being in it, because I
totally agree.
These matches are laid out in such a way. We know this because a lot of WWE guys have talked about this since they've left the company. These matches are laid out usually well in advance, and they're very, very specific, more so than any other match in the company, about one match flowing, one spot flowing to the next, flowing to the next, flowing to the next. And there were, I wonder if that maybe screwed some of this stuff up. There were spots in this match where it looked like a perfect example of that big superplex spot, which was a great spot. It was one of the two or three best spots in the match. But it was pretty obvious that they were trying to do a Tower of Doom spot, and Seth Rollins sensibly probably called an audible and was like, fuck that. So
But there was a whole lot of stuff like that in this match, and I thought it was really noticeable. And then, you know, not having Barrett, I mean, Barrett probably, I mean, besides Ambrose, would have been the best guy in this match. And he's one. He's another guy that you could have credibly seen as a winner. So you could have sort of milked the stereotypical WWE dramatic moments more. So I thought that really hurt it. I just didn't think it was, I mean, the finish, everybody's going to show the finish, but I thought the match was bad well before that.
Yeah.
that's not what made it a bad match. I mean,
I don't know.
Kind of was like the turd on top.
I disagree with you. I'm going to actually go with agreeing with Johnny on the match. I enjoyed this match. And I went into this match thinking, okay, Barrett's out. I knew he was out. RVD, Kofi, Ziggler, and who's the other guy who's in it besides Ambrose and Rollins? Who's the fourth guy? RVD, Kofi, Ziggler.
Swagger.
And Swagger. We knew that none of those guys had a fucking chance in hell of winning this match, right? We knew this was the Ambrose-Rollins show, okay? And so having known that, all I wanted the other four guys to do was get hurt on the fucking ladder and leap off shit. And they did that. And so up until that very end, I loved everything that Ambrose and Rollins were doing. You know, I love the way Ambrose came straight in, didn't wait for fucking pleasantries, just went straight after Rollins, threw him around like a rag doll. I love that every time it looked like Rollins was going to get the edge, it was Ambrose who was the one who fucking usually took him out, and vice versa. You know, and up until that Kane bullshit ending, you know, to me it wasn't so much a match of six guys as it was their story. And so having said that, those guys had me hooked. And I didn't – I mean, you're saying like these horrible Kofi spots. I thought Kofi earned his paycheck tonight, man. I mean, I understand
– Spider-Man.
I understand if you don't
this like – This is Kofi's fucking match. This is his specialty type match. This is what – yeah, this is his one night a year he gets to show off.
Okay, but fine. But I'm saying like – Kofi did not offend me in this match, which is cool because I'm usually with Phil and Dylan, man. I am not a Kofi fan, and I don't think this is the match to criticize Kofi on. You know, RVD.
He had one nice spot. I mean, he had one nice spot. A couple others I thought looked awful.
But even then, I mean, he didn't botch anything. He didn't fucking like RVD. I expected at least two or three fucking like obvious botches where you're just like, man, I wish this guy would fucking get out of the ring. He didn't have any of those either. For those guys, I'm going to have lowered expectations. And they met my expectations by not botching shit. And like
I said, my problem with both those guys isn't usually that they botch things. It's that the execution on everything they do looks so bad.
Well,
it's always my problem.
Yeah,
I'm worried Kobe's going to blow a spot. It's just he's going to throw a punch.
For not executing everything crisply. But now that these guys are supposed, you know, it's a different, come on. You know, I'm saying that they didn't fucking botch anything. They didn't fucking they didn't do anything to embarrass themselves. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? When that's what you expect those guys to do. You know,
here's what I would say.
Fuck shit up. He didn't fuck anything up.
But I will say this, and I honestly believe this, and this will make me a heel to Johnny and Will. But if this exact same match had happened in TNA, everybody would universally shit on it. If the exact same identical match happened,
and I would not even watch that product.
Move for move, spot for spot, everybody would be like, "This is a fucking abortion."
Well, you say that though, Dylan. Are there two guys like Ambrose and Rollins that I'd be invested in?
If it was in TNA, since Russo's there, there would have been an abortion in the ring, probably as part of the storyline.
Bring those guys. I'm not even talking about like, you know, Eric Young is your Dean Ambrose. I mean, literally bring the exact same group of guys into a TNA building in front of, you know, 47 people and have this exact same match. And I guarantee you it would have been shit on. This is one of those matches. I think it benefits a lot because, you know, of how over Ambrose is. And another thing is too, I fucking hate Seth Rollins as a heel. You know, like I you know, does that mean I think he's never gonna have good matches? Of course not. He's a good worker. But
fair.
I have no interest in him as a heel at all. He's a total change of channel level guy. I mean, like, I don't want to watch him. He's as bad as Randy Orton to me. He's as bad as Kane to me. I don't want to see him talk. I don't want to see him give a promo. Yeah, when he's in the ring I'll watch him, but if it's anything angle related, anything storyline related, I don't want to see it. I think it's terrible. So, like, that doesn't help matters either. Like, on these sort of purely emotional reaction in when it comes to like investment in guys. Like, I have negative investment in Seth Rollins as a heel. Like, absolutely none.
Well, that's so fair. That's a fair point. Now, having said that, we're just going to disagree on that because I don't have a problem with Seth Rollins as a heel. But having said that, you know, we have divergent opinions, and that's why we do shows like this, you know, because if we all agreed, it'd be really boring because we'd all just say, I agree with the last guy. That kind of sucks.
I have one more quick comment about this.
Go for
it. I think this was kind of your junior's math. I mean, I guess Squire is not really a junior, but everybody else was kind of your juniors. These are your guys who are going to do your dives. These are guys who are going to do your high spots, your other ladder match was mostly really big heavyweights, really exposed how weak their juniors division is. They really need to bring in Sami Callihan is sitting there cashing a check. Bring in Samurai Del Fuego. They've got some guys who they should bring up and dump some of these guys. This match would have been a lot better if I'm probably the most mild generico fan of the internet. But him as your guy in the Kofi Kingston role or in the RVD role would have made this match a lot better.
Well, you know, this match also needed was Zeb climbing the ladder. You know, that would have been a great spot for the match.
What the fuck are you talking about, Zellner?
Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
Come in there and try to climb the ladder.
That would have been good.
With different managers, El Maurice did it. So yeah, have Dutch come in there and climb the ladder. And get pulled off safely.
I was just about to say that. At least have them come in with whip somebody or throw powder. I mean, how hard is that?
Yeah. Y'all are fucking crazy.
Yeah, you're all nuts. You're all fucking crazy. This match was fucking great, so.
No. Anyway. Well, let's do this, guys. Let's take a break, do some commercials. We'll come back on the place to be Money.
Are we
going to
do commercials?
No.
Are we going to do commercials?
Well, we're not going
to. This podcast has commercials?
Yeah, do we do live reads? Live reads?
Whatever. Y'all. That's all I got to say. Anyway, we'll be back after this temporary break.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith Blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Okay, we're back on the Place to Be Nation Money in the Bank reaction show. I'm here with my buddies Phil, Chris, Dylan, and Johnny, and we're running down the Money in the Bank special event that happened tonight on the WWE Network. Our next match, these are guys I really love to watch wrestle, and they weren't put in a good spot tonight. Goldust and Stardust versus Rybacksel. Dylan, I know you have strong thoughts on this. What do you got?
Really disappointing match. I mean, this is probably, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was inoffensive. It was okay. But I've seen pretty much every Road to Brothers tag that they've, I mean, I've watched a lot of their house show tags, like both in person and on YouTube and stuff. And this is, I think of the ones that got any like significant time, not that this got a ton, I think it got like 7 or 8 minutes, but of the ones that got any meaningful amount of time, like more than 3 minutes, I think this is probably the worst one. Which is, I mean, not that it was bad, it was okay, but it should have been a lot better. It could have been a lot better. I like both teams a lot. I like Ryback and Axel together. I like the Road Brothers together. I will say, like, everybody's like, oh, this Stardust thing is so great, and I kind of get it, because it's one of these like cornball cheesy WWE gimmicks that's sort of endearing in a bizarre way. But I actually think it's going to really hurt this team. I think the matches are. I do not expect the matches to be very good going forward. If they continue with like sort of turning up that aspect of the team at the expense of the, you know, more traditional building the match style that they were going for before. So, you know, I mean, it was all right. I think this was another match that was also hurt because it was so obviously filler. Like, they didn't even attempt to hide the fact that it was filler. And when you do that, the crowd's not going to respond. I don't care, you know, how good the match is. If you can't even be bothered to pretend that there's some reason for this to be going on, then 9 out of 10 times the crowd's not going to pretend either. So, and it was also hurt by the fact that the Usos and Wyatt had such a good match in the open. So, I mean, if you're going to have it, I mean, that's a tough act to follow from a, just from a, you know, another tag match on the same card. So it was not that good. Not bad, but not that good.
Chris Zellner, what'd you think?
I thought it got a little boring there during the heat section. And that's crazy to say, considering Goldust was the guy selling. I did not like the work there. I think Axel, that singlet he was wearing tonight was kind of distracting.
We're going to blame it on Axel's singlet?
No, I'm just bringing it up. You know, just stream of consciousness right now. But the Axel singlet, that was like, what the fuck is this? Where'd this come from? But when it comes to Stardust, I like the gimmick. I think it's breathing new life into Cody, and he works totally different in the gimmick. He does some of the stuff he's done before, but he adds a little extra flair to what he does, and his mannerisms are really good. I think once he gets more into the role, this is only what his second or third match on television in the role. So I think once he gets more into it, then yeah, it'll get better. I did like how they ripped off after the match. They ripped off the old Diamond and Swinger finishing move. I guess that's going to be their tag finisher. Like, what makes you decide? I mean, watch Simon Diamond and Johnny Swinger matches to get moves for what we need to use as finishers. That's pretty funny. But the match was a disappointment considering the two teams who I like, you know, a lot. And it's just a filler match on the show. That's all it was.
I made the comment that I really wish this would have been the pre-show match, you know, because after that Kane finish in the Money in the Bank, if you put Daniel Bryan out there, the crowd's not going to be deflated after that, the finish of that Money in the Bank match. And I think that, you know, with the work these guys were doing, I think the crowd would have responded much more favorably. But I agree that the heat section was not is strong, and I don't know. I'm not going to blame that on Goldust, because Goldust can usually make any heat section interesting. I just think that Ryback and Axel weren't on their game tonight. I'm going to blame it on them, you know, because I loved all of Stardust's new mannerisms and stuff too.
Oh, one thing real quick. The one thing that the best part of the match I thought was Ryback when he was doing his little thing with his arm, and the fans started chanting, "Feed me more."
I still got it.
Wait, what'd you think, Sorrow?
Yeah, it wasn't great. And these teams have better matches in them. They've had better matches. I think maybe the difference is when the Rhodes brothers were doing the Brotherhood, they worked on their tag team style with Cody doing his Cody moves, and now he has a whole new, you know, style pretty much. And so they have to figure out how to make this into a cohesive tag team. They'd already made, you know, Cody as Cody in his offense, you know, meld with Goldust. And now they have to do it again because he's got a whole new persona and a moveset. So maybe that's the thing. And it wasn't the worst match of all time. You know, it wasn't like filler like thrown at you like Adam Rose, a match that wasn't even advertised. I mean, this was an advertised part of the show. I mean, which means that every major card ever has had stuff you're gonna call a filler match, you know, except for your Manias and Starcades, you know. So
those have plenty of filler, trust me.
Yeah, but they all get hype, you know. I mean, they all get hype in a storyline, and this has a bit of a storyline, you know. You know, they were feuding. Now Stardust. Ryback called them hermaphrodites, which apparently a lot of people were very offended. Like, I can't believe they were that offensive. Like, what, to the hermaphrodite community?
I mean, what,
all seven of them? What? I mean, you know, okay, fine. But yeah, these guys have a far better match in them, but this certainly wasn't like the total shits.
Phil, if this was on the Beyond Wrestling show, where would it rank?
Ooh, probably probably Sift or Sect. I didn't like Sift. I'm as big a Dustin Rhodes fan as anybody around. You know, but it's interesting. My kind of thought on this is the WWE tag style has really become a thing where they work these very sort of hot end of the mat, you know, almost Dragon Gate-ish finishing runs really well. This didn't have that. This had much more of a traditional sort of tag style, and I just don't know if, and that done not very well in compared to, you know, all this sort of much more high octane tag stuff done well, it really did feel like out of place. Like they were working a very sort of Kansas Jayhawks versus Fantastics style of tag wrestling as opposed to the stuff that really is the WWE style now. And this was not a good version of that.
Okay, so I want Dutch Mantel and Bobby Jaggers in paint and bodysuits. Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, I would think they'd be fantastic. Right by the Stardust things, or those guys are fantastic from that analogy. But I'm sort of with Dylan on Stardust. You know, I'm not digging it so far. I think they had such a great act before. I don't think this is they haven't shown that they can deliver this act nearly as well.
I just think they have to work it
all great things
better.
Come to an end. We got a lot of really great Willows Brothers tags there for about a year or so.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic. I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic and say that they're actually going to have some great tag matches in them. I like the fact that they're kind of both in paint, that they're both kind of doing this thing. I have no problem with the Stardust thing whatsoever. I just think that, you know, for one thing, the machine is really not behind them, and so they're going to feel as important as the machine lets them, and, you know, we'll see how it works. I don't know. I'm not ready to give up on Goldust and Stardust, or even Rybacksel yet, for that matter. One bad
match. Why couldn't they do an angle where Dustin dropped the paint and went back to Dustin?
Because it's always so failed.
That would have been I think it would have been more, it would have had more interesting possibilities over a long time. To me, if you're going to have Stardust on a show, you can't have them on the same show as Adam Rose. You can't have two guys doing a slightly different version. Like, I mean, the Stardust is like, to me, he's kind of like, I mean, the whole Cody thing, he's sort of like somebody that would have been in the late 70s, early 80s LA glam scene. And that's really not that far from Adam Rose. Like, Adam Rose is just a modern version of that. So I that's another thing I don't really like about it is I think those two gimmicks are both goofy in the same way and actually sort of overlap in weird ways culturally. So I don't hate it, but I don't have high hopes for it either.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to glam scenes, Adam Rose is more that London glam scene. And I hope that he wasn't hanging around with Jimmy Savile. You know, or something like that.
Oh, shit. Stardust looks like something J.M. DeMatteis would have come up with for the Defenders comic book in the late 70s. And I dig it a lot.
I can say it. Yeah. But all right, let's move on to the next match. Two big guys beating the shit out of each other. Big E versus Rusev. Ooh. Phil, your thoughts?
I like that. This was good. This is probably the second best thing on the show. I didn't see very much Rusev before, but I kind of enjoyed him. And Big E's a guy who's really good, although I think is sort of, for whatever reason, he isn't really over, and he feels like he's one of those really weird great heavyweight WWE wrestlers that we don't understand why never got a push and ends up getting released.
Yeah, we really feel like he's on that on the last reaction show about how over he was not.
He really feels like he's on that Luke Gallows, Drew McIntyre, Chris Masters road to not very good New Japan matches. That's where I feel like we're gonna see Alan Forel really overrate Big E versus Naito in about 2 years. But it was good. It was good. I mean, that fucking spear to the floor, that's the craziest goddamn thing I've ever seen to get no reaction. I mean, that was as dumb a bump as anything in any of the ladder matches.
That's the second one he's done in 2 months.
Yeah, he did. That's like a spot of his now. I really like his variations on missed and hit spears of like an offense. He had a really good Barrett Raw match, which we almost put on our match of the year list. And similarly, had a lot of really crazy things. I really like the finish too. He could have used a flag bear. I think this would have been a good use of Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who I think is still on her legend contract, right? If Hacksaw come out with the U.S. flag, I thought that would have been a good. He really needed like one somebody to give him some heat. I liked it, this one.
All right, what about you, Dylan?
Oh, I love this. You know, I've said this before on this show, on other shows. I think Big E is like really great at these short heavyweight sprints. I don't think he should ever be put to go longer than 12 minutes. I'm not even saying he can't do it, but he's like, this is like his perfect style of match. And he's got the way he works, he can get everything in 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. And it feels like a big deal. It doesn't come across like, oh damn, I wish he would have done X, Y, and Z. The spear bump was completely, it was crazier this month than any time he's done it before. Because they did it in the walkway, so they had the space that it was, it just looked worse. It looked more horrifying. I loved how they teased it the first time, and Rusev hit him with a knee. I thought that was a really cool spot, and a perfectly logical spot at that, which a lot of times in WWE, even the spots that I really like, they're not necessarily built on any sort of interesting psychology. That was like an actual learned psychology. How about that smart-ass term? But that was actually a rare example of that in the modern WWE context. The one thing that I
called
really
by the announcers, too. They called the announcers about like two things in that match. They're like, oh, he called him with that and on the Raw match. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
The one thing I do hate, though, is I hate Big E's stereotypical black preacher gimmick. and the reason I hate it, it's not even that I mind your racial stereotypes in wrestling, because I think if you're a wrestling fan and you like, especially old school wrestling, you pretty much have to, whether you publicly will admit it or not, you pretty much have to enjoy that on some level. But I really feel like this is a missed opportunity. I mean, if you're going to do a racially insensitive angle involving a huge black guy and Rusev and the Russian Lana, what they need to do is have Lana come out and cut a promo about how Russia was, look at all the wonderful things Russia did for the Scottsboro boys. Look at how they treated Paul Robeson. And then have Big E. Big E turns heel, does a Stokely Carmichael gimmick. I mean, that would be completely awesome. That would be so much better than Big E doing a Dizzy Lee Peterson stick.
Old man McMahon keeps us down. Old man McMahon keeps us down.
Question is, do you bring back Orlando Jordan to do a Byron Rustin gimmick?
No, dude, you got Tony Atlas right there from Legends House. Cause we're doing that thing. What you do is you have Tony Atlas, you bring him in as the flag bearer, and then Tony Atlas gets beaten down as the model of American minority. You know, he gets savagely attacked. I mean, I'm telling you.
If we're going that route, you got to bring Abraham Washington back. Because he's unhinged.
I'm telling you. If you're going to do a racially insensitive angle, how do you not do that? How do you do, like, a really bad, awful, like, over-the-top, stereotypical black preacher gimmick when you have that right there for the pickings? I just don't get it. But the match was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. What about you, Chris?
Oh, yeah. These two have had multiple damn good matches against each other, and they got the chemistry down. Kind of started a little slow, but it really picked up there at the end. That spear spot is just insane. And Rusev, I think his breath got knocked out of him. It looked like he exploded on impact, and he was selling that his ribs throughout the rest of the match. So that spot between those two horses. Yeah, that's a tremendous looking spot. And it's especially on a show where you had a lot of spear. These are the most impressive one. Big E's like preaching gimmick that he's doing right now
it comes off as so fake. They really, I mean, I don't understand why they decided to go that route with him. I guess they're trying to make him into Apollo Creed or something like that. But it's just so ingenuine. And when it comes to this whole the racial stuff, Xavier Woods was all over Twitter and I talking about how this has got to stop. We've got to take action. So yeah, there's something definitely brewing. You know,
I think they're going to do a Donald Sterling gimmick. Yeah.
Dude, Titus O'Neil's got to be, he's got to be the Avenger right there, man. Because that guy's awesome. You want to talk about a guy who's having great matches nobody's watching? Jesus. Bring that guy in to put Rusev down.
And moreover than Randy Orton.
Johnny. Oh, yeah. And Triple H.
What do you got, Johnny?
Well, I don't think in any way that the Big E's preacher speaking gimmick is some sort of racially insensitive thing. I think it's...
What?
No. I don't at all.
What?
No, I don't at all, dude. Here's what I think, if you let me speak. I think that knowing and reading the guy's fucking Twitter, the guy's funny as fuck, they're trying, and he's trying to find himself as a character, and his real voice wasn't fucking working. So now he's doing some wacky James Brown preacher from the Blues Brothers, the Coming to America preacher on the thing to talk about the U.S. of A, mixture. And I don't think this is some sort of racially insensitive thing. I think he's probably in on it as anyone else, like, to try to be popular. I do agree. It sounds phony as fuck.
It's over the top. That's what the
it
problem.
It sucks. It does suck. And it's phony as fuck. But I don't think this is some sort of racist conspiracy thing.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I just think it's racially insensitive, just like Kamala. I mean, to me, this is at least as racially insensitive as Kamala is, because at least with Kamala, you can make the argument that there are some sort of underdeveloped hunter-gatherer tribes in Africa.
So there aren't black preachers who talk like this?
No, not to this. Not to this.
Yes, there are. You can watch them on Sunday morning, Dylan.
Have you been to a black church? I have.
I have never been to a black church. I just click on the TV remote on Sunday mornings.
As a lapsed Catholic, I enjoy still going to church, and every now and then I go to a Baptist church here where the black preacher is every sort of stereotype of the hip running around chanting, and there's a great choir, and I love it. And I go there like at least once a month. So, yeah, because I still see spirituality, but I can't stick with Catholicism. But that's a totally different.
This is a great. This is taking an interesting turn. But look, I can almost forgive it if they were giving him a T.D. Jakes gimmick. But they're not even doing that. I mean, this is like this. I mean, I can almost forgive that. I just think, and it doesn't offend me. Nothing in wrestling offends me. I just think it's bad. I just think it's really bad.
But you know what though? Hold on, Johnny. Hold on. I think though, I think this is Johnny's point. Is I don't think this is the company. I actually think because if you know about Big E, he's a guy who's doing voices. He's kind of one of the quirky guys. I think this is Big E thinking this is the way he's going to stick out.
That's what I'm saying.
I agree with you. But I think there's something to be said for the fact that if it's clear that the way you're going to stick out is cooning, then that's the problem with the company, not with you. But yeah, I think that whenever R-Truth came up with his what was the gimmick he did where he had the fake teeth? Little Ricky. I think he came up with that, but that doesn't mean that the fact that that's the thing he feels like he has to come up with to make a living in the company doesn't mean that there's not a racial problem with the company.
I'm not saying there's not a racial problem with the company. I'm saying that this is probably more Big E trying to figure out a way to get over with his promos and going this way, and it sucks.
Yeah, because the reality is, if I could, even when Big E was just a big badass, when they gave him the push with the belt or whatever, you know, if you want to call it a push, nobody gave a fuck about him. You know, so I think he's really – he sees all these people being released. I think he's getting desperate and trying to come up with some way to stay.
All I'm saying is if you're going to appeal to stereotypes, at least appeal to them well. You know, if you're going to help, bring in Thunderbolt Patterson, for God's sakes. Let him come.
Yeah, I think –
Now, I agree with. That I agree with 100%. Thunderbolt Patterson as his manager needs to happen now. And
I mean, how the hell, first of all, how do they even do this angle with Biggie doing this ridiculous gimmick and they fire Teddy Long? Teddy Long's right there, the manager. Like, how do you even make that mistake? If you're going to do this, that's my criticism. Is not so much that I'm horribly offended by the stereotypes in wrestling. It's more that if you're going to do them well, or at least make them interesting. And I mean, more than that, I think Phil's point is right, which is that, yes, it's probably true that these guys had at least some of the input in this stuff. But, I mean, it's 2014, and the WWE's pretty much, as of like last year or a couple of years ago, they had like five or six guys, black guys on the roster that had dancing black guy gimmicks. I mean, come on. You know, like, would it be really that hard to
push?
Would it be that hard to push somebody who's black as somebody who just happens to be black and is a really good wrestler and has a gimmick that's not related to some ethnic stereotype. I don't think it would be that hard to do. You know, like, I don't think it's impossible. It's just very bizarre. It doesn't mean that stereotypes have no place in wrestling, because much of wrestling is built on stereotypes, frankly. But it just means that it's a very odd reality when we still don't have, I mean, they don't have anybody that isn't sort of, you know, it's just weird. I think it's very, very weird.
Here's a quick question. Is Big E the worst at this gimmick for any guy who's ever done this gimmick?
what guy has ever done it besides Slick?
It's not 100% removed from Rufus R. Jones or Thunderbolt Patterson or...
Oh, he's not in the same league as Rufus. Rufus was I mean, you're talking about a guy who was over. You know,
Rufus were great at it, but I'm saying, is he the worst? I mean, I'm trying to remember, is he worse than Big Red at doing
Big Red.
For those out there who don't know who Big Red is, when Jerry Lawler lost his Loser Leaves Town match, he was Bill Dundee's first opponent in Memphis. And they drew about 12 fans to the Mid-South Coliseum with Big Red.
Well, apparently what we really need to happen is the snowman needs to run into this podcast.
Oh, the snowman would fucking rock.
Oh, he's not even close to as good at that gimmick as the snowman or as Norvell Austin's brother, whoever that guy was.
The snowman in 1990. I mean, and that kind of plays to your point, Dylan, because the snowman was touching on things that were real. Discriminations that he felt were real, and he didn't play it like some jive talking, dancing, you know, black stereotype. He played it just like he was a black athlete that wanted his due, and that angle gimmick, the whole run was just awesome while it lasted, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my point. My point is they don't have to it's bad when you've got like R-Truth and Xavier Woods, two guys on a dancing black gimmick. You know, like, you had Crime Time. You had Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, who did their Millions of Dollars dance. I mean, they literally had, like, a roster for, like, every black guy on the roster had a dancing gimmick. Like, literally every guy at one point that was black on the roster had a Shuck and Jive gimmick. I mean, I understand it's wrestling. Samoans all have hard heads. Jerry Lawler's a pervert. You know, but...
Millions of Dollars wasn't a shucking and jiving thing.
Oh, bullshit. There's no way they would have a white team.
No, maybe not.
Arm in arm, waving back and forth saying millions of dollars with hair picks in their hair.
Yeah, it was reflective. It was reflective of fucking what's going on in real sports.
The point isn't that there's no connection. All stereotypes are based on something. I'm not claiming that this was just picked out of the ether. My point is that they had a roster full of these guys. You can individually defend any one of those if you want, just like you can individually defend any number of things. It's the bigger picture that I'm pointing out. Like, how hard is it to have one guy on the roster who's not doing that?
MVP was not a dancer.
That was the biggest stereotype of all. Come on, Chris.
Athletes, though.
MVP was a stereotype. It was a stereotype of the privileged athlete in
privileged
the NFL.
Black athlete. Yeah.
Okay.
Larry Bird and Mark.
Yeah, it was. It was every douchebag, you know, quarterback or wide receiver.
That was not a quarterback.
Not douchebag quarterback. It wasn't a douchebag quarterback gimmick.
That was a Terrell Owens gimmick. Is what it
Terrell
was.
Terrell Owens. I'm sorry. Yeah, there you go. That's I'm sorry. I don't like football.
But he wasn't.
Neither American.
You know, he didn't have the one smile or none of that, or you know, or anything with fried chicken or anything like that. You know.
He had a lounge where only you could get in, and you know, and it was more of a hip, modern stereotype.
But other than him, though, Dylan is completely right. You look at Ahmed Johnson, guys like Farouk, you know, all the gimmicks, and it's bent. This is all bent stuff. This is style of thinking. It's the old way.
Yeah, because Farouk, you know, was exploiting on those stereotypical black Roman gladiators with foam helmets at first there, and
clearly,
and then they immediately put him in a miscegenation gimmick. So racial side.
I just had to get in about how awful that fucking outfit looked.
Okay, guys. Well, I don't know if we actually helped race relations or put them back 20 years. But having said that, okay, before
welcome,
we move on
welcome
to the
back to white people talking about race.
Exactly.
Hold on, real quick. Phil, do you have anything to say about Jason Biggs?
No. We're not going to talk about anti-Semitism on this podcast. Unfortunately, they fired Colt Cabana, so we don't get to complain about them being anti-Semitism on this podcast.
Right. Okay, you know, I'm just going to throw this out to the panel. I mean, because I have nothing to say about. Does anyone have anything to say about Layla versus Summer Rae? Does anyone want to say anything?
It's really funny.
Go, Phil. It's really funny
because this is the first time I've ever used the WWE Network, and the stream was perfect, except it completely cocked out during the Layla Ali Summer Rae match. And I got like the last minute of it. It went resetting and it worked fine for every other part of the paper. So I don't have anything to say about it.
Now that is smart technology.
Yeah, right, exactly. My TV knows me.
Chris, what about you? What did you have to say about this?
Fandango attire was the best special referee attire I think I've ever seen. That shirt was phenomenal. But other than that, the match sucked.
All right. Dylan, anything?
No.
Oh, okay. So we got some deep and profound thoughts on that Divas match. Okay, so let's get back.
It's weird they put this on a pay-per-view. Don't they? They have a lot of hours of television to blow this feud off of. This feels like something that you would. Do they still have that show that's aimed for little kids that they don't do any punches to the head?
No.
Now, this was total Divas stuff right here. Yeah, this match was Total Divas Season 3 type shit.
This show needed Torito badly. And you're sort of, if you're going to do that sort of like undercard match that technically has a gimmick that people don't care for, but they're going to pop for because it's fun to watch, it needed a Torito match.
Well, the one of the Colons is out. So, yeah, they're on the bench right now.
Like I said, bring back the Mexicals.
Yep.
Speaking of comedy blowaway gimmicks and racial insensitivity.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Every show he's booked on these days. But.
No, because if you bring back the Mexicals, I'm going to have to explain why it wasn't racist and why it was actually a response to racism. It was a response to racism by being ironic.
It's super crazy. It's super crazy to be the team with Matt Stryker these days. You know, we don't need
really?
That.
No.
Okay, all right, let's move on to the main event. Zelner, all right, thoughts on this main event for the world championship here. Eight guys.
This match was pretty damn good. It was worked differently than the other Money in the Bank match because this is the heavyweight Money in the Bank match. So this is where you had all your big guys doing all the ladder spots. Cesaro's a fucking freak as usual. You know, the stuff he was doing, the uppercuts were fierce. Sheamus, another solid performance by Sheamus. He's always good these ladder matches. He always does some cool stuff with the ladder. Orton, the blood made the match to me, and that was even those booked. But the fact that we got juice in a match like this added that extra drama, and the fact that he was bleeding like a stuffed pig at one point towards the end, and they tweeted out tonight that he had 11 staples put in his head. Mm-hmm. And the fact there's stuff with Roman Reigns. When Roman Reigns was just going after that cut when they were battling the ladder, that was fantastic stuff. I mean, he put his fingers in his head at one point, was gouging it. So it was a sick looking spot. Kane sucked a dick. Cena, for a guy that
I missed that part.
Yeah, for a guy that won the match, he was like low key in this match. He didn't do a whole lot of anything. He was just there, and then he came, popped up at the end, and got the belts. But as far as the work in this match goes, I dug it a lot. I thought it was probably all in all the best match on the show, but it's not that far from the tag match or Rusev and Big E. But just Cena winning was the obvious booking plans because you don't need to. Good to get Reigns or Wyatt in there because Lesnar is going to be the champion anyway. So Cena makes sense. He owes Brock a win. So that's the obvious match for SummerSlam. That's the way they had to go. So it's totally understandable.
All right. What did you think, Sorrow?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It took me a while to get into it, actually. It's a differing opinion from everyone else, apparently, but I was enjoying the previous ladder match more at first and comparing because of the similar spots. Here's the part where everybody has to try to run up ladders and throw each other down, which is stupid anyway because no one's ever won that way, and they just did that, an hour ago, and that kind of threw me off, and that's not speaking to the quality of the match. That's just speaking to having two of the same spots in the same card. And that Cena bump on that ladder that the Bray Wyatt threw him onto was fucking sick. That RKO that Orton gave Cesaro off the ladder was slicker and fucking owl shit, man. That looked fucking cool. I have like no notes because I got into it. First, I wasn't really into it, and it got me into it. Cena winning makes sense. You're right, though, man. It seemed like he wasn't the major focus of that match until he won, which I like. Man, it's a different story.
All right. Well,
it was good. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Phil, second ladder match of the night?
I definitely liked it better. I thought it was the better of the two matches by a fair amount. I think it was hurt by having too many people in it.
Yeah.
And that because you had so many people that you, there's no reason. I like Del Rio. There's no reason for him to be in the match. You really didn't need. I thought Sheamus was good in it. You kind of didn't need Sheamus.
You really didn't need Cesaro either because no one had bought him as actually winning the match.
Cesaro would have been a good guy to have in your undercard match.
Yeah.
And I like Cesaro. Like all the episodes was good in it, but I think the problem with you had so many dudes in it that Cena didn't really felt like an afterthought in a match that he's winning. And if you cut three guys for that match, you could have had him mean more, and it would have meant more when he won. Otherwise, I liked it. I don't know, work when it was pretty good. I thought all the performances were, I thought everybody was good in it. I really enjoyed a lot of the individual things. I really liked when Roman Reigns had like your Roman Reigns run of offense that he does in every match. I thought that looked really cool. I thought Kane was fine. Role in the match was fine. I didn't think he was very good in it, but it was kind of cool to have like the one guy running interference, which is something I don't think I ever really remember from one of these matches before. Where it was just like, you know, the 2-on-1 aspect of it was a lot better in a booking way than having Kane run in on the first match. Would have been nice. Would a Big Show would have been fine in that role, or that would have been a good use of Big E turning heel and having to be the guy running interference for Orton or something. That's pretty good. I don't think it's going to make my list of my match of the year list, but I enjoyed it.
Dylan?
Yeah, I thought it was considerably better than the first ladder match. I actually thought Sheamus was the best guy in the match. I mean, from the perspective of, to be honest, I think he's the best guy in the company this year. Either him or Ambrose, I think, are the best in-ring guys in the company this year. And what kind of shocked me about Sheamus in this match was I expected that because he was such an afterthought, obviously, and so clearly not going to win, I expected that he might, not necessarily phone it in, but he might be, like, less relevant, and they might not do a whole lot with him. But I actually thought there were points where he was really asked to kind of carry the match. Like he took the first really big bump when he took the bump off the top, that flat back bump from the top when they were dangling, which I thought was actually a really sick bump if you think about it for a guy that size. He took another good bump out on the floor. Like his offense looked really good. His timing was really good. I thought he was the best guy in the match from the beginning to the end. I mean, Reigns' run was the most exciting thing in the match by far. But I thought Sheamus was the most consistent sort of thread from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a match, it wasn't outstanding, but I thought it was good. I thought they did a pretty good job of making you think there was an outside chance that somebody other than Randy Orton or John Cena would win. it isn't really necessary for. I don't think you have to do a ladder match that way for it to work, but it helps if there's one or two other people involved that you believe have a chance of winning. I don't know. It was good. It wasn't great. Maybe could have been great. I sort of agree with Phil's point about there maybe being too many people, but then when I look at the people who were in the match that I really liked, they were probably the logical people to cut. And I don't know. The match would have been any better if those people weren't in it. So that's kind of a catch-22.
I kind of agree with you, Dylan, in that you don't want to cut a Cesaro or a Sheamus or those guys because those are the guys that are good, you know? I kind of wish that, you know, the company wouldn't, you know, just hit the reset button and just, okay, well, we're going to go back with Cena because he's the devil we know, you know. I kind of wish they would have made it a thing where not only are you guaranteed a world champion, you're guaranteed a world champion that's never been world champion before kind of match.
Well, I mean, you saw what I posted. This is what I wanted to happen. I said this on the podcast that me and Dave did last night, the Wrestling Culture Show, and I posted this other places. I tweeted this. What I thought they should have done. And this is fantasy booking, but I actually think this makes sense too. And I think tonight sort of proved, if you watch the elements of the show and how things unfolded, I think it's pretty obvious that this could have worked and worked really well. What I thought they should have done was have Ambrose win the Money in the Bank match, then all hell breaks loose with Kane, all these guys help, and Orton actually wins the main event. But then Ambrose immediately cashes in, and the show ends with Ambrose as the champion. Because They really had an opportunity, and people are, oh, well, what do you do then? And then Ambrose is going to be killed right afterward. Well, not really. You can have him win a battleground, and Ambrose losing to Brock, I don't think, because, oh, well, they'll never waste a Brock match on Ambrose. Well, they're going to have to waste a Brock match on somebody that's a hot up-and-coming guy eventually anyway. I mean, it's going to have to happen. Otherwise, he's completely worthless, and there's no value in him at all. I mean, if he's just going to wrestle the same four guys, they may as well just cut their losses and get rid of him. Eventually he's going to have to wrestle somebody else. And if that somebody's not Daniel Bryan because he's not healthy, it may as well be the other guy who's really, really over as a babyface, that's sort of exceeding expectations. It's a hot act. And I don't think Ambrose losing to Brock would have really hurt Brock that, or Ambrose that much, because him just winning the title would be such a shock. I think it would have been a huge moment. I think it actually would have made sense logically. I think what we saw tonight sort of fits that idea that it would have been a huge moment, and it's not just something that I concocted in my head out of whole cloth. I understand why they went with Cena. All things considered, it makes sense. It's a safe move. I don't know that it's a smart move in the big picture sense. I understand why they didn't put the belt on Reigns. I understand why they didn't put it on Cesaro. But I don't think Ambrose would be hurt as much as Cesaro or Reigns would by a short title reign, because I think Ambrose is such a better talker than both of them that he could salvage a short reign, you know, in a way that those guys maybe couldn't. So that's what I would have done. I mean, if I was booking, that's how I would have booked it.
Well, I would assume that Lesnar ends up putting over one of these young guys to lose the belt rather than win it from him, although maybe he just ends up losing it to Randy Orton or something terrible like that. But, I mean, I would assume that... You know, it doesn't beat Daniel Bryan, isn't Daniel Bryan or Ambrose or Reigns the guy that beats him for the title rather than the guy that loses the title to him. Like, I didn't have a problem with Cena winning. I just think that if Cena should have, if he was going to win the match, he probably should have had Sheamus' spot in it rather than being a guy that I kind of forgot was in it for most of it. Cena Brock was really great, so I'm kind of really looking forward to part two.
Another match.
But yeah, that was one of my favorite matches of the last 5 years. So
yeah, that's great, you know,
man. I'm not going to complain too much about the booking that gets me a rematch of that.
Well, I'm kind of like Johnny. It took me a while to get into this, man. I think the turning point for me where I really got into it was where Reigns did that feat of strength with Cesaro and Sheamus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then they get back because, you know, it's three of my favorite guys in the match, you know, being featured. And then I agree with the blood thing. But, man, that Kane stuff, man. I just, like I said, if you're not invested in the story of Kane, period, you know, like I just think that he just makes everything worse. You know, I don't want to see him on my TV screen. Like, it doesn't bring joy to have him in the match. So him being in it, I understand your point, Phil, saying that at least he was running interference. I don't want him to run interference. I'd rather have, like you said, like Big E or someone else said earlier that on the house shows they were having Rybacksel as Orton's lackeys. You know, have someone like that, you know, doing that job, you know?
Or just not have him in there, period. You were talking about having too many people in the match, not even have him in there.
Yeah, you know, so there. I'm just kind of like...
Kane, but I did kind of like,
hey, Will,
I did kind of like,
hey, Will,
that.
Well, did Kane beat you up, like, in school or something?
Not
because,
enough.
I mean, it, Triple H, it seemed,
you know,
it's
just a relic from another period that need to go, that should appear special.
You gotta remember, Johnny's a Grateful Dead fan, so it's... He's sort of the master of tired acts and relics from another period.
Oh, really? Really?
You
talk about reinventing and still drawing more people than anyone else.
That is true.
Kane does not do that.
I do agree that Kane is the Grateful Dead of professional wrestling.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Successful forever. Okay, fine. Fine.
Successful when dead, too. You know, half the Grateful Dead are dead, but when the other members...
No, they're not. And you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yes, they are. Jerry Garcia.
Jerry is dead, and that's it.
And then the Pigpen's dead, right?
Well, no, the keyboards. the death keyboard slot, you know. Yes, but everyone else is still alive, sir.
That's what I'm saying. But when they tour, they fucking draw shitloads of fans. That's what I'm saying.
They don't tour together, though.
Okay. I'm sorry I'm not up on my Grateful Dead history. Where's Buddy Carlos of Cheap Trick to save this segment? Where's he at? He's not touring either.
The dead aren't touring around with, like, a fake Jerry. Okay.
Well, I think Buddy Carlos' son is touring with Cheap Trick now, so... they have something in common. Anyway, so let's do this, guys. Dylan, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Can I do thumbs in the middle?
Yeah.
Can I use the Meltzerian scale here and do thumbs in the middle?
Sure.
Because I to me this is a thumbs in the middle show. Like, it wasn't bad. Certainly wasn't bad. I couldn't call it a bad show. There's too much that I liked. If the finishes had been, I don't mind Cena winning, but it wasn't exciting. It was just like, okay, whatever. So if the finishes had been in the big matches had been more exciting, I probably would lean more toward thumbs up. But with a one ladder match I didn't really care for, with a finish that I hated, and another ladder match which I thought was pretty good but wasn't great, and had a finish that was just it's kind of hard to go thumbs up unless there's like a couple of blowaway great matches. And while I really liked the Big E Rusev match and the opener, I don't know that I would call either one of them like a blowaway out of this world great match. So thumbs in the middle. And not only that, but I would say it was worse than the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, which is amazing to me. I can't even believe I'm saying that. And worse than TNA Slammiversary pay-per-view, which is shocking. I actually think it was the worst pay-per-view of the month of June.
Wow. Okay. What do you think, Chris?
This is the first show in the network era where I felt like that I'm glad that I spent just $9.95 on this show. If I had spent the full money, I would have been like, oh, shit. Well, you know, yeah, it's a thumbs in the middle show. It kind of slightly up, but still, there was enough, you know, filler stuff on this show that drug it down. But yeah, was it worth $9.95? Yeah, it was worth $10. Was it worth $60-something dollars? Fuck no. So, yeah, you kind of figured this show would not be as strong because of the situation they had with Brian and Barrett, you know, changing the whole way they were going with the show. So, yeah, this was like, you know, let's throw this shit together. And Battleground, you know, Ambrose and Rollins are going to be facing off at Battleground, supposedly. And Roman Reigns, I guess, is going to get his big win on Randy Orton on that show. That's two matches that's already been advertised. So that show will probably be better than this one. But, like I said, something in the middle.
All right, what about you, Sorrow?
Show was a blast. I dug it. It was a lot of fun. There's worse ways to spend a fucking Sunday night, and I liked the matches a hell of a lot more than most of you all did. And, you know, hey, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, some people like shit and some people don't. I think you're all insane and high on acid, but, you know, hey, you know, you're my friends.
I need some of that stuff.
Wait a minute, hold on. The Grateful Dead fan just accused everyone else of being high on acid?
Yeah, exactly, because I know the symptoms. I know the symptoms.
I'll tell you what,
you've all been dosed. All of you were dosed into not enjoying what was a perfectly great, fun show.
Oh, no, I thought the whole point of acid was it let you enjoy things that suck.
No, but it's not.
The whole point of acid, actually, as someone who eventually got to that point in life to give it up, the whole point of acid is to do a drug that makes you hate the fact that you did that drug. At some point you go, why did I do this? Oh, by the way, I am going to a WWE house show in 1 week on the 5th, right about a half an hour from here, that is still being advertised on the radio as like this. It's WWE at the First Bank Center. Come see WWE World Heavyweight Champion Daniel Bryan on the radio. Right now, still.
Wow. God. Okay, so Phil, thumbs middle, up, down on your first pay-per-view network experience here?
Yeah, I haven't been watching full shows. It's a thumbs down, man. It's three hours a show and 2 hours of talking about it with you guys. It's a lot of time that I've been in this show for one match I really liked, one match I kind of liked, and one match I thought was okay, and a bunch of things I didn't think were that good. So I'm going to go thumbs down. It wasn't horrible. I certainly watched worse wrestling in my life.
So it was the time invested that broke your back, huh? We should be watching that lots on YouTube, huh?
A lot of things on YouTube that I haven't watched. I have a 120 list watch later folder. I have a
not as good as Beyond Wrestling.
Even though it wasn't as good as the Beyond Wrestling show.
Christ.
It wasn't. It just wasn't. It wasn't even close to it. Joe's the only other person here who's seen the Beyond Wrestling show. Is it as good as the Beyond Wrestling show, Dylan?
Yeah.
No. Beyond Wrestling show is easily better.
I will say this, Phil. I do want to thank you, though, for joining us on your first, last, and only appearance on our pay-per-view reaction show.
Oh wow, that's hard.
Well, no, because I'm guessing. No. This is why I said that.
Fucked up. Well, I thought we were friends, man.
We are friends, but I can only imagine. Hey, Phil, you want to watch the pay per view and then spend 2 hours talking about it? Nah, I think I have some soup to make or something.
I might have to do it again if I got, you know, I'm married, so I got to keep, you know, my wife.
Spend time with my wife
often on Sunday. So.
No. I said it completely as a joke. You are welcome to join us anytime.
I am intrigued. Battleground does sound better. I am kind of
just,
into.
You made it sound like fuck. I just wasted 5 hours of my life, you know. So. But anyway, I do want to thank all of you guys for doing it.
Well, you didn't say whether you gave the show a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
I'm actually kind of in a thumbs up, leaning towards the middle, and then the fact that I kind of like stroke. I liked both the ladder matches to varying degrees. I love the opener. I thought the first Divas match was fun for what it was, and I liked the Rusev Big E match a good deal. I just didn't like the booking, man. I think WWE booking is horrid, and I think that's one of the worst things about the company is the way they book. They don't take chances. They go the safe route. You know, what Dylan proposed for both ladder matches. Not only does it make sense from a storyline perspective, not only does it elevate someone new into that upper echelon, but it's completely logical. It's somebody that had been feuding with Hunter, so you keep that authority mix thing going in. And if you don't think Reigns is ready for the world title, give it to Ambrose, who at least from a wrestling and even a speaking role is absolutely ready. So
come on, he looks like Squiggy. He looks like Squiggy on steroids. He's not ready yet.
Oh, he is so ready.
He looks like my brother Devin on steroids.
I actually think you could have ended in the same place, and you just could have executed them better. I mean, I think if you had done something besides a Kane run in that ladder match,
hello, sir.
You know, you could have just easily done something like Ambrose is too concerned with beating up Rollins that he ends up, you know, overshooting a move or something like that, hurting himself, or some sort of spot where he goes too far to try to beat him up and loses his chance to get the thing, and then you still give it on Rollins. You could have had Cena win that match and just had Cena in the match more and mean more in the match. Have him be the guy who gets accidentally cut open with the ladder. You're going to have a guy get accidentally cut open with a ladder.
Yeah,
you could have ended up in the same place.
Yeah, that's good. You know? Let's make you accidentally get in.
Yeah.
It's quantum leap. We're going to leave you right into that moment, you know, so you get accidentally in.
Yeah, or, you know, you get Harley Race on the don't get Harley Race to be the doctor at ringside. Have him punch him in the eye. Open up a cut.
And then we get Thunderbolt Patterson to mysteriously appear as Big E's talking piece.
The point is there were a bunch of old guys who wish wrestling is still like it wasn't the 70s. I think it's the short answer.
Thunderbolt Patterson as Al from Quantum Leap. I don't know what's going on with the Ziggy.
That's funny, man. Christ. All right, guys, any final thoughts? Anyone else want to throw in any 2 cents in before we head out? Dylan, you got anything else?
The only other thing I would say is that if you actually thought this show was really good, I would seriously tell you to go watch the Ring of Honor and, believe it or not, even the TNA shows, because I'd be fascinated to hear how many people actually watched all three shows, which I would guess is not many. But second, how many actually thought that this show was the best of the bunch? I would be shocked if very many people would say that, because I like WWE a whole hell of a lot more than I like Ring of Honor and TNA. and I thought that both of those shows were better. So,
what was on the ROH show besides that tag match? Anything else?
You had
that decals.
You had Bad Influence versus, which, you know, Kazarian and Daniels versus Red Dragon, which sounded horrific on paper and actually ended up being pretty good. It actually ended up being pretty decent. Let's see. There was Cedric Alexander, Roderick Strong, which was not bad. They did the opener scrambler match that ACH won, which was fun for what it was, kind of like your throwaway fun match. The title switch, I didn't like the match that much, Cole and Elgin, but the actual execution of it was, if you're going to do an overbooked sort of clusterfuck match that pays off on long-term angles, that was better than anything the WWE did tonight.
Wait, which one of those guys switched the title to which guy?
Elgin won the belt. Are we doing an ROH podcast now? Elgin won the belt.
Who are these people?
Adam Cole was the ROH champion? Jesus Christ.
For a long time. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Adam Cole.
Exactly. But I think we can always, I think Phil will agree with me that Briscoes versus Mike Bennett and Matt Hardy match was better than, I think, it probably anything on this pay-per-view, but certainly better than anything other than the opener.
Well, I'll give this in.
Sure.
I want to cut this out. I think just about almost every of the Embusca de Dolo matches were better than this pay-per-view.
Oh God!
Not every one of them. There was one really bad. There was a couple really bad Super Alco and Junior matches.
Cesaro and Campanario must see. So anybody that's listening to this, look it up. You gotta watch it.
Yeah, and if actually on that note, I've got on Segunda Caída. I reviewed every one of the Embusca de Diola matches and sort of made a list of the ones that I thought were must see matches. And Cubs fan did a YouTube folder of those.
Sweet.
So if you want to look for that, you can just actually link to that. Just watch the ones I thought really great. And they're all 6 minutes long.
Give us your website there, buddy, so you make sure people know where to look for you at.
Segundacaida.blogspot.com.
All right. Anything else to plug, Phil?
No. The Aspen Journal of Ideas coming out in a month, and I'll be writing about culture for the Aspen Institute. So you should read me right about culture for the Aspen Institute.
Interesting. All right, Dylan, talk to us about cultures. The Wrestling Culture Podcast.
Well, I'm not affiliated with the Aspen Institute, but Dave and I did our first show in 6 months a couple days ago, and it is up on the Place to Be Nation right here. So check it out. It's a half year in review. We'll do a bunch of other shows. We'll be much more regular with our schedule.
Do you need to have me on to talk about Beyond Wrestling?
Yes, so we may bring Phil on to talk about Beyond Wrestling and that and the Briscoes in 2014 who are like the best thing that nobody talks about because of where they wrestle. Them and Congo Kong and Timothy Thatcher. Thatcher's great. And then also I'm doing the Impact reviews at voicesofwrestling.com. So if you like to see people, somebody shamelessly bash Impact, I'm not as funny as Tom K, but I do have the Tom K stamp of approval, actually, which is nice.
That's always a good thing.
If you want. So I've been doing those for 4 weeks. It's pretty painful, but I'll keep doing them at least for the time being until I go completely insane. And follow me on Twitter at Dylan Waco.
All right, right on. Johnny, what can we expect from the Titans this week?
Oh, well, this week? I don't know.
Well, what did y'all just record, motherfucker?
Well, we currently have our Georgia Championship Wrestling show up, part one. Part two we'll be recording this week. And Titans of Wrestling, basically the greatest show here on the Place to Be Nation. No one really even comes close to us. We're the best.
Christ.
We are, dude. And I don't know. It's not, it, you know, you have to.
I'm about to hang up.
You have to.
Zellner, what up, Zellner? What up,
you can be as good as us because you're not. And, just trust us.
Zellner, what do you got?
Titans are wrestling.
All right. What's the question?
Whether or not you think Titans of Wrestling is the greatest show on the Place to Be Nation network.
I think you have to plug something, Chris. We're plugging things.
It's the greatest show on the Place to Be Nation network. Let's get that straight.
Thank you, sir.
What I'm going to plug is the Lucha Reports, which I just did one tonight. So find them at Death Valley Driver, LuchaWorld.com, wherever you see it leaked from other people that stole it and cut pasted it.
Oh,
that's where it's at. So, yeah, and we also got some good stuff coming up. Negro Navarro with Guadalajara tonight. We got a Solar match with Negro Navarro coming up this weekend in Arena Lopez Mateos. So, Black Terry against Charles Lucero in Monterey coming up next Saturday. Hechicero against Kaifan. Yeah, it's good. Lucha's coming up this summer, so.
Anything in San Antonio, Chris?
Nothing in San Antonio.
Well, anything from a 90-mile radius, you be sure to let me know, okay? Because
always.
All right. Hey, Will, in all seriousness, too, we do have an upcoming show. We're talking about the greatest masked wrestlers, and we're going to do the whole American masked wrestlers with a special guest, the one, the only Mr. Wrestling 3 be our special guest on Titan.
There wasn't one or only Mr. Wrestling 3. There's been like 10 Mr. Wrestling 3.
Well, yeah, you know what? Pick the one. Wink, wink. Pick the one walking around with a 0-1 belt. Mr. Wrestling 3 will be our guest on the show.
Good deal.
Coming up soon.
And on that note, we're going to wrap it up, fellas. I appreciate all of y'all coming on tonight. And we'll be back again for the next paper. What's the next pay-per-view? I forget. What is it?
Battleground in 3 weeks.
In 3 weeks. Wow, doing double
duty. Yeah, Christ almighty.
Christ. All right, yeah, that sounds like a real fun show. Anyway, we'll be back. Everyone else, listen to Place to Be Nation. I'm out. Take care, guys. Storming on these drums like I'm thunder and lightning. Ain't no way you breaking me, kid. I'm harder than nails. Plus, I keep it on lock like I'm part of the jail. I'm slaughtering stale competition. I got the whole block wishing they could run with my division, but they gone fishing with no bait. Kid, your boy, hold weight. I got my soul straight. I brush your mouth like Colgate. In any weather, I'm never better. Your boy's so hot, you never catch me in the next man's sweater. If they hate, let them hate. I drop your whole clan. Lay your ass down for the 3 second tan. Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, yeah. My time is now. It's gon' be what it's gon' be. 5 pounds of courage, buddy base, 10 pants with a gold tee. It's a war dance, a victory step. A raw stance is a gift, and you insist it's my rep. John Cena trademark, y'all are so-so. And talk about the bread you make, but don't know the recipe for dodo. Aiming guns in all your photos, that's a no-no. In this pop, your lip lock, your big talks are blatant no-so. See what happens when the ice age melt. It seems monetary status is not what matters, but it helps. I'm rockin' timepiece by Benny, if any. The same reason y'all could love me is the same reason y'all condemn me. A man's measured by the way that he thinks. Not clothing lines, ice links, leather and minks. I spent 20 plus years seeking knowledge of self. So for now, Mark Breck is living life for wealth. Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now.